And that, of course, was Bono and U2. What a great song that is. One, that's off of one of their best of albums from 1990 to 2000. Came out in 2002. That's U2. Thanks, Bono, for that great song. This is Community Justice Talks, and I'm your host, Molly Roland Leach. And you're listening to KHENLP Salida 106.9 FM on your dial. We are your community radio station, and we're a wider community as well. If you can grab a computer, you can stream us online from anywhere in the world at khen.org. It's great to be here with you today, and I'm really looking forward to the conversation that we're about to have with Professor Ted Grimsrud from Eastern Mennonite University. He's on the line live with us, coming from University back east in Harrisonburg. That's Eastern Mennonite University again. And I just want to say a few things about Ted before we go into our conversation today and give you a little backstory on why we're talking to him today, at least one of the reasons why. Here on Community Justice Talks, we like to talk with people from local and statewide as well as nationwide movements towards solutions in conflict and crime. And there's so many things that are happening in our world today. And of course, conflict and crime happen both on the individual, communal, and national level. So this show aims to provide, perhaps you might call it hope, solutions, and to have an open, honest dialogue that is unfiltered about justice. And again, both at the very personal as well as communal and national levels. So focusing today, again, on unpacking violence as a theological problem. So Ted and I are going to start out with that as the baseline for our conversation. And he had a blog that was posted just last week on Open Democracy, which is an excellent blog and news site. You can get more information and read blogs and news there at opendemocracy.net. And his post on the 16th of February was called Violence as a Theological Problem, and has a lot of inspiring details in there that unpack why we in the United States seem to justify violence. He says in that article, deeply ingrained in the religious consciousness of the United States is the belief that retribution is God's will. And he goes on, according to the logic of retribution, holiness governs God's behavior. As a holy God, God cannot stand to be in the presence of impurity, of human sin. Human beings invariably violate that holiness because all of us are sinners. God is bound to respond to sin with punishment, because to forgive would violate God's holiness. Compassion without satisfaction is not possible for God in this tradition. And, of course, since we've got him live on the line, we're going to go in and talk about that a lot more. And further on in the article, he talks about restorative justice. And, of course, at Eastern Mennonite University, there's a powerful program called the Zaire Institute for Restorative Justice that was spearheaded by Dr. Howard Zaire, who is considered and honored as one of the way showers and leaders of the movement here in the United States, at least of the modern movement. And so just a few more words about Ted before we bring him live on the line. He's a professor of theology and peace studies. And prior to teaching at EMU, beginning in 1996, he served 10 years as a pastor in Mennonite churches in Arizona, Oregon, and South Dakota. He is especially interested in the connection between Christian theology and pacifism. He teaches classes in theology, peace studies, ethics, and the Bible. And some of his books include the most latest book, actually, which was published just this last November, 2014, called The Good War That Wasn't and Why It Matters, The Moral Legacy of World War II. He also blogs at thinkingpacifism.net. and a website that gathers his writings at peacetheology.net. So without further ado, Ted, such a warm welcome to you. I'm really honored and just excited to unpack this with you today. Welcome to Community Justice Talks.
Thank you, Molly. It's great to be here.
Why don't we start out with that blog that was so inspiring to me and thousands of others, I know, in just sharing with us a little bit more about what that blog meant to you and, you know, just the title even, Violence as a Theological Problem.
Well, I think maybe the core of my concern or interest is the realization that in the United States, it seems like, according to surveys, that people who identify themselves as Christians are more likely than those who don't to support capital punishment, to support punitive criminal justice practices, to support wars even. And that troubles me as a Christian that would be so. I understand Christianity to be very much a nonviolent, anti-punishment faith. And so I have decided to try to understand why that would be so, why Christians would tend to be more positive about state violence. And came to the conviction, based on research, that one of the major reasons is core kind of theological understandings about God and how God responds to wrongdoing, and what humans who want to follow God should do in response to wrongdoing. And so it seemed like there's a big tension or even conflict there between kind of this one understanding of God that seems to underwrite violence based on theological grounds, and another understanding of God, which would be my understanding, which is that God is basically a God of peace who calls upon God's people to be nonviolent and peace-loving.
Now, I just want to tie in, thank you, I want to tie in last week's conversation that we had that was with Jean Bishop. And it was an extraordinary journey and one that had me in tears quite a few times, as I'm sure it probably had quite a few of our listeners. Her sister and brother-in-law, as well as their unborn child, were murdered by a young man over 20 years ago. And her story is a profound one, and in a nutshell, it is along these lines of bringing in that faith that S.T. Coleridge might say, man's faith must exceed his grasp or her grasp, and the mercy that you're touching on, God's mercy, is her path, really, and she actually is very good friends with the very young man who killed her sister and brother-in-law. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about God's mercy and how that should hopefully inform us and outweigh this strange need to be so punishing when it only makes more violence.
Well, I think that if we start with, I mean, in Christianity, start with the life and teaching of Jesus and how did he respond to wrongdoing, to people who hurt other people, to people who were considered kind of outside the expectations of the society. And one of the key things in the story is his remarkable willingness and commitment to forgive people. And in fact, that's one of the things that got him in a lot of trouble, because there was a kind of a whole system of how you dealt with sin in that context, which was to go through the temple, do sacrifices, kind of submit yourself to the religious structures. And Jesus just kind of bypassed that and presented a picture of God as he understood God and as he embodied the will of God, that God was basically, fundamentally, a God of mercy, a God of healing. And I think if we, for me, seeing that as kind of the starting point, then helps me look back at the story in the Bible and to actually make it more apparent that Jesus was not doing something new or different, that he basically was portraying, or in his life and teaching, was presenting God as God is presented in the Bible. Now, of course, there are lots of other pictures of God in the Bible too, and that's one of the challenges or complicating things, is that God in the Christian Old Testament is a God of mercy, but also at times presented as a God of wrath, a God of judgment. I think it's a big mistake that a lot of people make to assume that this God of wrath and God of judgment is the God of the Old Testament. And I think when you look at the basic story of the Old Testament, the kind of the main plot, actually over and over again, it shows God initiating healing, merciful action. In the story of the Exodus, in the giving of Torah, in the bringing people out of exile later on. In all of these cases, there was nothing that the people had to do to pay God back. God just simply chose to give them life, to give them forgiveness. And then they were challenged to live faithfully in response to that. And I think that's basically then what Jesus is doing, is just giving that same kind of message. And I think what happens with Christianity, the Christianity that is more retributive, is that we just don't really take Jesus' own approach that seriously. And in terms of why that is, that's a very complicated question, I think.
Mm-hmm. And an important one that you seem to be trying to tackle, too.
Yeah.
Why is it so difficult for us to see this and thus live our way out of the hypocrisy and into truly living the principles that are illuminated, as you have just mentioned?
Well, maybe
that's a really big question.
It's a really important question, and it's a hard question to answer quickly and easily. I think we have to think about just our broader cultural dynamics. In this particular culture in the United States, we have a long history of what you could call kind of redemptive violence, that we get our security, we get our freedom because of using violence. It is kind of the myth, I would say, but is deeply ingrained in the kind of the consciousness of the society.
That's such a good point. If you'll excuse me, I just want to underline that we seem to be making false connections with justifications, as you talk about in that blog post that I mentioned a moment ago.
And I think, in terms of the history of Christianity, it's very interesting that the basic kind of theological move that gets made happens kind of late, really, in the history. It's not among the original Christians or the first Christians, certainly, I believe, not in the New Testament. But where what happens is that you kind of have this understanding of God, which I would see as most the strongest message in the Bible, of God as fundamentally merciful, and that justice is kind of subordinate to mercy, that justice is the work to heal or bring about restoration when there's brokenness. So when you have brokenness, then how what has to happen? Well, what has to happen is some kind of healing, some kind of restoration. that allows the people, you know, the people who have been hurt and the perpetrators to kind of come together. Well, justice, all of that is for the sake of the wholeness of the community. Well, what happens later, and probably partly it's influence of, you know, Roman, Greek thought and culture, is justice comes to kind of be separate from mercy. And justice is kind of an independent reality. So you have justice and mercy in tension, even in conflict at times. And with that then comes an understanding that in order for God to be merciful, and God is a God of holiness, God is a, you know, a God who's kind of connected with the moral nature of the universe, and this understanding, the moral nature of the universe, requires retribution or payback or satisfaction of God's justice if there is some violation. And so in that then, in order for God, ultimately things kind of get turned on their head, and in order for God to be merciful, God has to be satisfied through some kind of payment. And that's then in the theology, which really didn't emerge until the Middle Ages, the doctrine, what's called the doctrine of atonement, or the meaning of Jesus' death as a sacrifice to God to satisfy God's justice. With that theology, it kind of accepts then that the fundamental kind of nature of the moral universe is one which requires payback, which requires retribution. And so then mercy really gets kind of marginalized or moved to the side. And it's, and you know, the irony is that it seems obvious once you start thinking about it, that's not what Jesus did or taught at all. So it's just this, but I think at the same time, this theology of satisfaction or of the need for retribution kind of fits in a lot of cultural dynamics of, you have to get revenge and all that stuff.
As if it is unsafe to take another route. It's unsafe and even unheard of to allow voice for the offender and for there to be even possible dialogue where it's wanted in whatever form that may come, whether it's through written letters or through a mediator, however that might work. And
well,
of course,
I think part of that is because there's a sense of security or stability or something that comes with that kind of retributive way of thinking. And to say, no, we're going to humanize the offender, we're going to not just think of punishment, kind of throws everything open, you know.
As if we're condoning the actions by default, right?
Right, exactly. And part of that, just on a more kind of philosophical or theological level, is then that threatens our way of understanding the moral universe, you know. And so you'll get theologians who, I mean, these are like academic theologians who write about this, and they'll say, for God simply to forgive, or just for God simply to offer mercy, would undermine the moral fabric of the universe. So there's a lot at stake.
Wow. I want to pause here just for a moment. You are listening to Community Justice Talks, and today we're having a live conversation with Professor Ted Grimsrud. He is a professor of theology and peace studies at Eastern Mennonite University, and he's widely published both on reputable online blogs as well as a published author in print. And we are talking today about a compelling theme of violence as a theological problem, and we're going to also go into some other sub-themes on that as well. I hope you're enjoying this conversation, and you can check out khen.org for this podcast if you want to pass that along. It'll be ready within 24 to 48 after this live show. You can also check out restorativejusticeontherise.org. And I want to just mention again, for more information about Ted and his work, go to thinkingpacifism.net. He also has a website that gathers his writings at peacetheology.net. His most recent book is called The Good War That Wasn't and Why It Matters, The Moral Legacy of World War II. That's from Cascade Books, November of 2014. So, Ted, I'd like to, on the theme of what we've been discussing, go into your view as and your take on world theology and the common themes that you might be noticing around this subject. What are you seeing in pacifism, in this understanding that perhaps we've been wrong about punishment?
Well, I think there is definitely movement, more openness. Certainly, people are, I think, increasingly aware, including theologians, of the problem, the problems with our criminal justice system, the problems of war and conflicts among nations and the inability to kind of break the cycle of violence. And I think there is more openness to thinking about kind of what's underneath all this, why are we stuck in these patterns, and that sort of thing. But in my general arena of Christian theology, I wish there was a lot more. And I think that one of the things that is happening that I'm not personally have not personally participated in very much, but is something I'm very interested in, is kind of interfaith conversations where Christians and Muslims and Jews and Buddhists and humanists are talking together. And it's hard, though, when you're talking about theology, to transcend, you know, like how do you think theologically within a particular tradition and honor that tradition, and at the same time really respect and honor other traditions? And there's a certain sense, I think, in which I believe that doing that on a theological level among people who think about that kind of stuff could be a model for a much broader social transformation.
Let's talk for a moment. We've been one of your books. I'd like to get to both of them, actually, at least the most recent ones. First of all, Instead of Atonement, The Bible's Salvation Story and Our Hope for Wholeness, that was published by Cascade Books as well in 2013. Can you share with us a bit about the book?
Yeah, that book is actually an in-depth discussion of what we've been talking about with this, with the violence as a theological problem. What I do there is I start with this problem of retributive justice and use our American criminal justice system as a kind of an example of just the spiral of violence. And, you know, like, for example, just that we have gone in the last 40 years from an imprisonment rate of around 100 people per 100,000 to 700. So we've kind of increased the rate of imprisonment by seven times. And just the things that you talk about a lot, just the damage to people and to the society. And with that as kind of the problem, then this basic question of why is it that Christians are part of the problem instead of being part of the solution in general? And my argument is that it's because of how we think about God and how we think about how God deals with sin, or basically the issue of how what salvation is about. And what I do in the book is basically develop the idea that when you read the Bible in terms of the basic story that the Bible tells, kind of the main plot with all its diversity, kind of the main plot that holds it together, is a story of God bringing salvation through God's initiative of mercy, not through this dynamic of retribution and satisfaction. And so then I say, well, so this then provides kind of a theological warrant to rethink the whole approach to wrongdoing.
So let's talk about restorative practices, restorative justice.
Yeah.
And, of course, you hailed from just a fabulous university, Eastern Mennonite University, very strong peace and conflict studies department and peace building institute
right.
that is hosted there every summer with people coming from all over the world to take part in that and training opportunities with folks doing extraordinary work to unpack violence, punishment, and so just thank you for your contributions as a part of that university. And of course, then, as mentioned before, there's the Zaire Institute for Restorative Justice, co-founded, I believe, with Dr. Howard Zaire, who's considered the grandfather of the modern restorative justice movement here in the United States.
Yeah, we call him Grandpa.
Grandpa, right. And he, and having met with him quite a few times in person, just an extraordinary human being and someone who seems to really practice the walk of restorative justice as much as he talks about it.
Yeah, indeed.
So let's hear your thoughts on restorative justice, and you know, feel free to share anything that you're seeing happen on campus and all the great things that EMU is doing.
It's an interesting question. Certainly, the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding, the graduate program where Howard has taught and that has where the Zaire Center is housed and has a not only a strong work in the area of restorative justice, but also many other realms of peace building, conflict resolution. It has had a, you know, really an incredible impact around the world. But one of the, maybe a little bit ironically, but it's still encouraging. But one of the challenging areas is to implement that kind of philosophy, especially in relation to restorative justice, in terms of on campus and student discipline issues, and how do we work at you know, protecting the, you know, kind of the identity, the mission of the school, while at the same time really respecting the people who, in some sense, violate some boundaries and that sort of thing. And it's been hard to do. It's in some ways more difficult, perhaps, working at that close at home. But it's certainly a lot of energy, a lot of creativity is going into trying to find ways to be redemptive consistently in our internal life as well as our external work.
And I know from the great honor that I have of speaking with people like yourself in the field of restorative justice that as with the conversation we've been having around punishment and our seeming addiction to it and the safety zone that it perhaps falsely provides us, there's too the assumption that restorative justice is a means to an end surrounding forgiveness. Can you share with us your take on that?
I think it's complicated, you know, because there are circumstances where people are really hurt, really, you know, egregiously hurt by some action, and I think, as I understand restorative justice, and a lot of that is through Howard Zaire's work and talking with Howard, the real concern, I mean, one of the main concerns is with the well-being of the victim and helping a person find wholeness. And the kind of assumption, ultimately, is that that does involve forgiveness and reconciliation. But the danger has been that sometimes that part of it is rushed, you know. So somebody is really hurt, and they are working to kind of reconstruct their life, and then they're told, well, you need to forgive. And as I understand, the thinking about that is that, well, that needs to be, we need to be very cautious, very slow. But I think the ultimate ideal, you know, the ultimate kind of vision, the wholeness really has to do with the possibility of forgiveness, the possibility of reconciliation. That is a goal. That is something to keep in mind, as opposed to kind of the retribution and that cycle of bitterness. And because a lot of people will talk about how, you know, something they are really hurt themselves or their loved one, and the punishment of the perpetrator didn't really help, you know, and the and this kind of living with this anger and hatred doesn't help. It's and so somehow there needs to be a way to work through that and to move ahead. And I think the kind of this vision of wholeness, and, including forgiveness on some level anyhow, seems really essential to moving in that way.
And I love how for those who are victims of any form of crime and conflict, and we all have been one at some point or another, it's an opportunity to be empowered in the sense that you can have that choice to perhaps communicate by letter or with an intermediary between you and what we call the offender. And so there's multiple ways that Howard and so many others in our world, Dr. Zare, are showing that a victim need not be afraid. In fact, that their needs, although we can't say what those are honored and very important for the inquiry to begin. So,
And certainly at the heart of that is a sense of kind of restored power as a human being.
And an ability even to move on, perhaps. Well, I know that we have maybe about 4 minutes left here, and I really would love to hear more from you about this other book. It's profound. Tell us about it. It's called, for our listeners, The Good War That Wasn't and Why It Matters, and subtitled World War II's Moral Legacy. So give us an outline.
Okay. Well, the basic question in the book, or the basic agenda really in the book, is to kind of challenge the present life, really, you could say, of World War II as this kind of decisive example of how a war was necessary, a war was good, and that we always have the possibility that could happen again, and so we need to prepare for the next war. And basically what I wanted to do was to just scrutinize World War II. And to see you know, how does it really stack up? Because we have all these assumptions about, I mean, I certainly grew up with that. Both my parents were veterans of that war, that this was good. This was, at least it was necessary. But we don't really need to defend that. And what I did is, even though I'm a pacifist personally, and it's even possible that only a pacifist maybe would really want to write this book. I don't know. But I really tried to take it just in terms of what were the statements that were made to justify going to war and to support the war. What were the purpose statements? And why are we doing this? And then to take those seriously and then evaluate how were those achieved or not. And the core of it was there was a speech given by President Roosevelt just prior to the U.S. going to war, and then there was an agreement that Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill from Great Britain put together called the Atlantic Charter that kind of outlined the purposes. And basically it's self-determination for people all around the world, disarmament, you know, all these really positive kind of things. And then the war itself didn't really seem to achieve that. And I use a lot of kind of just war, the just war tradition in terms of just tactics and just causes, and then basically argue that if you look at World War II and you look at the cost in terms of the incredible number of people that were killed, and also the transformation in the United States. From before World War II began, we were basically the 17th or 18th largest military in the world. And because of World War II, we created the Pentagon, we created the CIA, we created the nuclear weapons regime, and basically created these institutions that have kept us on kind of a permanent war footing ever since. And then we participated in the last 70 years in many conflicts that in no way measure up to kind of the just war
mm-hmm.
expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the book, I talk about the war, and then I talk about the aftermath in terms of how the war changed the United States. And then, not wanting to just leave it kind of at that with the critique or the negative, I then talk about the resistance to the small amount of resistance, but how that grew into other movements, the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement, the
mm-hmm.
anti-Vietnam movement.
Mm. Sounds like such a profound book. Again, that's The Good War That Wasn't and Why It Matters, The Moral Legacy of World War II. Ted, in closing, I have a kicker for you.
Okay.
And you can choose to take it anywhere you wish. If Jesus were here today with us, what do you think he would want us to discover from this conversation and live forward?
Oh, I think that one seems fairly easy. I think the reality that forgiveness is and mercy are the kind of fundamental. That's the moral character. That's the moral nature of the universe, is toward mercy, toward forgiveness, and that God or however you want to talk about ultimate reality does not require satisfaction through punishment or retribution.
Mm. Very well stated. Thank you so much for being with us. We've been talking with Professor Ted Grimsrud from Eastern Mennonite University. And we hope you'll check out this podcast once it's up and ready at khen.org. Thank you again, Ted, for joining us today on Community Justice Talks.